All right, hello, I'm Michael Washam. I'm here in Building 18 with the Windows Azure App Fabric team. Have yes. Clemens Masters, he is a technical lead.
That's right.
Program manager, chief troublemaker. Protocol surgeon, there you go. Mm-hmm. And I have MK, who is a development manager over at Fabric Service Bus.
Hi.
Okay, so can you guys tell me what each of you do? I know the titles all sound good.
Yeah.
Yes.
What does that mean?
So I'll start. I'm here on the team. I'm a PM. Typically, I don't own features, but I kind of have the broader view on the feature set, mostly from the customer perspective. So things I care deeply about is how the API shape is, how the protocol shape is, and what our overall developer story is. And then there's MK and his team, and they're really caring deeply about how things are implemented. He's going to talk more about that, and how the internal structures of the system look.
You were just in Slovenia last week, weren't you?
I was, yes.
What were you doing over there?
I went to the NT Conferenza, which is a conference that is now running for the 16th year. And I was there for the 8th time and talked about Service Bus and App Fabric All Up, our future story. And participated also in the developer keynote. So one of the parts that I also do in my role is to do some outbound communication, like talking on video and being at conferences. Awesome.
Yeah, he's been very humble, right? He's been the Tosh leader for Service Plus for like now a year and a half.
Yeah.
So since we've gone production last year. So I'm MK. I go by MK for short. Full name is Murli the Krishna Prasad. Yeah, that's why. I used to be the architect for Velocity before, distributed caching, and now I'm the dev manager / architect for Service Bus.
Great.
Specifically working with Clemens to all his troubles and making that into a product so he can sell it back. So. That's my job, specifically.
Okay, so you guys had a pretty big release last 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
Tell me about it. What all did you ship, or what all are you working on shipping?
Yeah, so Service Bus, as you know, has been in production for a year, right? And we are primarily focused on sort of the connected messaging path. By the way, what Service Bus provides is a connectivity mechanism through messaging.
Okay.
That's what it does. And so the production version of Service Bus has been doing asynchronous messaging, being able for your services to be able to tunnel through firewalls, talk to the outside world, right, project them out. And what we've added in the CDP is to add the asynchronous, or the disconnected path. So even if your service is not connected, you're still able to send messages, and we can keep it around and then deliver it to you later.
Okay.
That's our big, kind of a big CDP. You can add more on the customer scenarios.
So the asynchronous messaging is based on a brand new messaging engine that we built.
We have a message queue.
So we have a message queue, and our team. So I'm from the ex-Service Bus team. And MK is from the X messaging team, so we came together...
Like just about, 6 months ago now?
Yeah, 6 months
Last
ago,
October,
and it was this
yeah.
turbulent first
few months of honeymoon.
It was a pretty violent honeymoon.
It takes
a while to get those things together and build one coherent service out of it. And so the messaging team... Came in and brought two assets. It brought in a build messaging engine that we're now integrated into Service Bus in the last half year, and also MSMQ. Mm-hmm. So MSMQ and this brand new messaging engine are now living under one roof.
Okay.
And so the disconnected messaging technologies that sit inside of Windows and sit inside of Windows Azure are now under one roof. And so we've been building this engine, the new messaging engine, for a year and a half.
Okay.
And so this is the first time this is showing up, and it's a very significant thing, because what we do now with Service Bus, with having the synchronous pieces with the relay and having the asynchronous pieces with the messaging PubSub engine together under one roof, Service Bus has already been pretty unique amongst all the cloud offerings because of that capability to allow endpoint federation. But now with the PubSub capabilities, we're even more unique.
It's through your messaging bus right now, right?
Exactly.
You can truly call it a messaging bus for all your messaging needs.
That's right.
So what this really gives you, for customers that have built applications in the enterprise space, they previously used MSMQ.
Yep.
So you've kind of made this where you've taken the MSMQ concept or any other kind of queuing concept and you've moved it out basically completely outside of the cloud.
That's right.
So you can have solutions that are on-premise, have message queues actually out in the cloud talking on to...
That's right. So one of the interesting thing, like he said, one of the interesting assets that Service Bus brought into the field from last year, right, was the fact that you can now talk to a cloud service, service running in the sky, be it from Azure, be it from your mobile, maybe from your laptop, or from your enterprise enterprise systems. So effectively, it's now bridging all those different form factors, different geo-distributed things already together, where you can now send messages to the cloud and be able to have recipients in any other form factor as well.
Yes.
Right. So what we're doing is just extending that to add these MSMQ-like capabilities to that system.
Okay.
Right?
That sounds great. So do you guys want to... move over to the market board.
But one question, one thing I need to add, this is something beyond MSMQ, because MSMQ, one of the longest asks in MSMQ has been PubSub.
Right, that's
and
true.
In fact, this is probably one of the longest outstanding asks in Microsoft platform has been a PubSub thing, and it's finally have it in the system. So that's a big,
yes.
A big step forward.
Great. Okay, so let's move over to the market board.
Sure.
And let's do a little bit of just market board whiteboarding and
absolutely.
Explain to our audience what all you guys produced.
Okay, let's do that.
You want to talk scenarios, show how Service Bus can be used?
Okay, so we're back. We have moved the camera over to the market board.
Yes, we did.
Clemens is gracious enough to get up in front and explain to us how all this stuff with Service Bus actually works.
Yes, at the whiteboard level. So we've introduced two brand new concepts. Let's talk with the simpler one, and that's a queue. And what is a queue? Well, everybody should know, right? It's a sequential log of messages. And you can enqueue them and you can dequeue them. So there's a pull from here and there's a push from here. And so you have parties which publish messages into the queue and you have consumers which pull messages from that queue. So that's something that we built and we so you can now go and go into Service Bus into your namespace at, let's say, mk, if we can make it that short, .servicebus.appfabriclabs.com. What you get at that place, right, is you get... a root of your namespace, and then you can get, there's names, so a naming tree, so let's say A, B, so at mkservicebus@fabriclabs.com/A/B, you can go and put a queue. So that's also how you do that in our system, in the API. You walk up to the Service Bus namespace client, which is the client for this. And then you can go and create somewhere in that namespace hierarchy, you can go and create the queue. Or if you do this with REST, you create a so-called queue description, which is a little XML document. And then you put that into any name in the hierarchy. And the way you structure those names is completely arbitrary.
Is there any just arbitrary limits on how many queues you can actually create in that namespace?
Yeah, so we have quotas in the system. And
that's only a labs quota right now.
Yeah, it's a labs quota right now. And, how many can we create? 20?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
20 while we're in CDP.
While we're in CDP. Once you give us money for it, then we'll be happy to create more of them.
Absolutely. As many as you want.
Basically as many as you like.
Okay.
Exactly. So, so the basic notion is that we have this namespace, and you can go and create queues, and you can create topics, which I'm going to get to, in that namespace alongside of with connection points. And the connection points is an artifact that we don't create explicitly yet, but the way you do this today is you just create a relay listener into Service Bus. So the namespace is shared by listeners and by queues and by topics.
Okay.
So as we add more constructs to Service Bus, they'll all show up in the namespace. So we have the queue. So that's something you can create. What do you do with it? Well, let's say you have a party, a consumer that's now happily pulling messages from that queue. then you have a number of producers that are sending messages into that queue. Let's say you have an e-commerce website. And what that e-commerce website does is it takes orders, and then you have a consumer, and that consumer is kind of the fulfillment backend of that. What you will find is that traffic here may be shaped like this.
Very spiky.
Very spiky, depending on what you're selling, depending on time of day. Now,
time of the year.
Time of the year, time of anything. So what you'll find is that you can do with this model, what happens is the consumer now pulls a message, works on that message. When it's done, it's going for the next message. You can have one or two. So what this happens now is this nicely flattens out all the traffic. So now by just doing this push-pull translation effectively by putting a queue in the middle, you're
buffering.
You're taking the nervousness out of the system, and you have a very predictable flow here. What you can also do, and that's something that I keep being amazed that people are trying to do this with a push-push thing, is do load balancing, where you're now adding more and more consumers as your load goes up. And you can now have competing consumers. And so this takes a message, works on it. That takes a message, works on it. That takes a message, works on it, and that too. So you have all these parallel consumers. And as if the queue length doesn't go down, you can go and keep adding them. If the queue goes down, then you can basically keep taking workers away. So with that, you can do very easy load balancing across a bunch of workers because everybody's just fetching work as they get capacity available.
Is there any way for the clients to choose which messages they're interested in listening to or in processing?
For the consumers here?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have one facility in that area which is called Sessions. Which allows you to, from the publisher side, basically declare what messages belong to each other. So you can create a set of related messages. And we have a facility, we call them session full queues, which is a flag that you set when you create the queue, which allows you to then accept sessions on this side. So you don't accept single messages, but you accept sessions.
Right.
And then all the messages belonging to that session are pinned to one consumer. So the capacity for each message here is 256K. So if you wanted to have a unit of work, a document, and that document is larger than 256K, what you can do, you can break it up, and then you can label it all with the same session ID, and then that goes on to that one consumer.
Okay, no, that's perfect.
So the queue is really perfect for those scenarios where you need to have the capability of load leveling, as we call it, and load balancing. Another thing it's really good for is if the consumer is... Look, it's the moon. It's fast asleep. So the consumer isn't there, is asleep,
got rebooted,
is disconnected, and you keep sending messages. Another thing, this is so you may want to do this intentionally for all kinds of reasons.
Right.
So let's say you want to, you take data in for some processing, but you only need that data kind of for end of day processing. So you really need to have this only available for a nightly report.
Matching.
You don't need to spin that consumer up at all until, whatever, 8 o'clock in the evening. So, and it's especially in cloud environments, it's really interesting, right? Because you pay by CPU hour.
Right.
So you just simply let all that work pile up. And you could literally, in Windows Azure, could go and programmatically go and deploy a worker role.
Spin it up.
Have that run until there's no more work, and then spin it down again.
So you're only paying for that limited amount of
access. Exactly right.
And you're not keeping servers around.
So you don't need to have that sitting around. And, of course, this is also great for any disconnected scenario. So if you have a phone, you could create... So if you have an application for mobile devices, you could create a queue that targets a particular mobile device and then use that as a mail slot for that device.
Right.
What we have on the receiving end of this, as I said, this is a pull thing. So let's talk about this particular path. This is a pull option where the client will periodically go and get those messages. Now, people say polling is horrible and pulling is bad. What we have here is a way, and this is something that shows up in the HTTP API very explicitly with a timeout parameter, which we do under the covers for the TCP protocol that sits underneath the messaging API, is a timeout. And that timeout is, you can set it theoretically to 120 seconds, but if you go through the Windows Azure load balancer, you will find that will cap you at 60 seconds. So 55 is a good number. So you can set that to 55, which means that we're only, if you park a HTTP polling request in our service, we will hold on to it for 55 seconds if there's no message available. So if you have an idle queue, we will only pull, 63, 4, 5 times per hour. And so that makes for very few round trips and a relatively quiet socket, yeah, which is almost the same or practically the same as if you have a push mechanism, because that also needs to refresh, because the intermediary infrastructure always needs to be reminded that
one thing I add here, so this is also called long polling, right?
Yes.
If you know it. One interesting thing that he brought up, which I want to add to this stuff, is that when I talked about multiple form factors before, protocols is a very important aspect of it, right? Like phones probably can't do TCP, they may be able to do REST, right? Whereas if you're running on an Azure worker role, you can do TCP for better throughput and bandwidth.
That's right.
So one of the key things in Service Bus that we do support is multi-protocols. So you can come through HTTP REST, you can come through TCP, we have .NET APIs, if you're familiar with .NET APIs, or we have WCF clients. So you can come through any API or any protocol and kind of talk to these entities.
That's right. So we currently have three ways to do that. The messaging API as the super powerful
thing underneath. .NET API, yep.
And then we have the WCF overlay, which sits on top of that and gives you a simplified experience, really. Not all the power underneath.
Right.
But you get a very simple WCF integrated experience. You get all the message options that you have in WCF. And then this REST protocol. HTTP protocol. And we're going to add more protocol options in the future. We're working on some standardization efforts to have more interoperability even for the binary protocols with a bunch of companies in the industry.
Sounds exciting. You guys have done a great job so far.
Thank you. Well, so that's the queues. So otherwise, so the queues gives you 256 kilobyte of message size, which with the session features you can go and build out. The capacity in the CTP is limited to 100 megabytes per queue. We're looking to build this out significantly. For the first production release, we haven't landed on exactly what that's going to be. We're thinking about initially 1 gigabyte. But we certainly have some headroom to make those bigger, and that will all depend on what customers ask us for, mostly. Because we need to manage the storage, and we need to go and shuffle storage around, so that's all work to do that reliably, and to be able to have backups and all those things. So we're going to start with a gig, likely, and we'll see how far we can go.
Okay. Some other work you guys did that we're talking about earlier is topics.
Yes. So a topic is... that's the thing. Yeah, so that's like a queue, and that's something that we mostly expect that people will start leaning towards topics over queues. The easiest way to explain how a topic functions is to look at that queue and think about what the pieces are, right? We have the tail of the queue, that's where you put stuff in. You have the head of the queue, that's where you get stuff from. And it's a sequence. So we're gonna put a break in the middle. And really, the tail is the topic. And the head is a subscription that's looking at that topic. The topic, when you go and push messages into that topic, and that's kind of the sequence here, they form an order. And what the subscription does is the subscription memorizes where it was last in that order, effectively. So now I can go and have multiple subscriptions that look at a single topic. And now every single one of those subscriptions is going to keep track of what messages it has seen and it has not seen. So now every subscription gets its own message sequence consisting of all the incoming messages, right? All the incoming messages. And this forms now, from the perspective of the consumer, a virtual queue. Right. I'm going to get to filters and those capabilities in a moment.
Do you want to explain the naming for this one so they know?
Yeah. So the topic has a name. Let's say, so this now sits at /A/B. The subscriptions are not volatile things. They're actually stable names. They have stable names in the world. So this is now...
Each subscription is...
Is a named entity.
It's a named subscription.
It's a named thing.
Okay. It's a named durable subscription.
Yes. Okay. So in the REST protocol, this shows up as... So the subscriptions are sorted into a collection called subscriptions. In the API, you don't see this. We actually fold this together. So you call this thing sub 1... And you can call this thing Fred. So, I mean, no matter how you know, these are named things that you create underneath dependent on that topic. So this would be in the REST protocol, /A/B/subscription/Fred. And that's how you can talk to this thing. And the protocol is also symmetric between queues and topics in the way that you talk to the topic as you would talk to the queue's tail, so the messages collection, and you talk to the subscription as you would talk to the queue's head, which is the messages/head collection.
Okay. So when would you use a queue versus a topic?
So that's what we have that right up here. You have a producer, okay, producing orders. You have a consumer, consuming orders, purchase order thing. If I want to have an audit log, and I simply want to have a place where I can go and have a service that will archive all the original messages that came in, I create a tap, and I pull from that tap into the archive.
So you could actually get a copy of every message coming into that queue, even though some other consumer is consuming and processing those messages.
That's right. So you have one of the most basic uses of topics, and that's something that's already very attractive for very many cases, is that you always have the ability, if you have a topic, if you just have this basic configuration here, a topic, one topic with a single subscription, without making any changes to your architecture, without making any changes to your app, you can always lay an additional tap on that event stream and use that for all kinds of additional purposes. So if you want to do, so your purchase orders flow in here, and you process them, and now you want to go and do an archive, or you want to have real-time statistics, roll them up, and then republish them to something else. Whenever you have an additional need for that event stream, you can basically just lay a tap right in Service Bus and not change any of the parts of your application at all.
You can just plug new subscribers in.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And
I think he's coming to the more powerful part of the subscription, which is the filtering aspect of it.
That's exactly right. So let's say you have, these are orders that come in. And let's say we want to go and now filter those orders and triage them. High value orders, or we can go, yes, let's do the auditing. So we have an auditing case, archive auditing. Now we want to have actually business case auditing, where we say we want to go by the invoice total volume, and we want to have someone who has an eye on that or some special processing.
Anything over $1,000.
Anything over $1,000, yes.
Like fraud detection systems, for example.
Yes. So let's talk about the message briefly. So the messages that we publish in here are special. Is a special type. It's not the same as the SOAP message. It's not the same as the MSNQ message. It's a special type, and the type consists of effectively two sections. There's a body, which is a byte array, and then there's a table inside of there, which is the property table, which has names and values. So it's a property bag.
Okay.
Even though that's moving a little bit forward, when we have the WCF message, for instance, WCF message is contained in the body of this. So this is a framing message. So if you want to have a rough equivalent for this, it's the HTTP request. Right? There's an HTTP request that has a bunch of properties on top and has an entity body on the bottom. So this is kind of like this.
Okay.
So
if you, as you send messages, what you will do is you will serialize an object or a WCF message into the body of this message. And then, because this is an arbitrary key value store, we have some specialized properties that we're using for routing, so that we pre-populate them. We also have them special case in the API. But you can add your own values to them. So what you would do is you would take an object. So that's your PO, which is some complex data structure. And you will go and serialize that PO into the message body. And what you will then do is you will take some significant values that you want to use for routing from that data structure, and we'll promote them. And we already have some community folks who are building some libraries around this, I've seen. You will promote some of those values, let's say the total, and let that be, in this concrete PO, be $2,000. You take that total and you promote this out into those property tables. Now you're sending this message in. What you can do in every subscription has a set of rules. Those rules kind of are always in here. And what those rules are is a list of, really a list of rules.
Actually, can you use the red one? I don't think we can see it very well with the green one.
Ah, okay, good. So what those rules lists are, is that better?
Yep, much better.
Good. They have a condition, and they have an action. The condition is a simple SQL 92 kind of expression. Right now, we're going to, people have already said, hey, I want to have this as a link query. What we actually do is we compile the SQL 92 down into link, but we don't have a way for you yet to specify your own link expressions. We're going to fix that. So you can create a condition, and you can now go and key off the properties you're adding into those messages. So you can say a condition that is like total greater 1,000. If that condition is, now the way this is evaluated is if the condition of a rule is matched, then the message gets selected. So each message that is existing in this topic is read to the rules engine, and if the condition matches, the action is performed. And then we yield that message out. If the message matches no rule, then the message is simply not part of that virtual queue. The action is a way to add or alter one of those message properties. So if you want to go and now flag this message for further routing, because you can take a message out of a queue, basically forward that straight into another topic. So you can basically just take those messages and format them on. In the future, we're going to let you interconnect all those pieces too. So the action could then be, let's say, audit equals 1, which now will add or change the audit property in this message, and then you can go and forward that message on.
Okay.
So one thing to add here, so each subscription can have any number of rules. So you can have different rules for each subscription. So that's how you can even partition your workload as well.
That's right. So for instance, partitioning, what you could do is you could go and say, let's go and partition by last name. So you say last name equals, last name like,
yeah, K.
K percent. So we have like expressions. So you can do a prefix matching a partitioning. You can do number range partitioning. You can do all kinds of partitioning in that way. And you can dynamically go and add those rules and remove those rules. So that's something you can easily do at runtime. Within a subscription, you can go and modify those rules and also make rules based on correlation IDs and all kinds of interesting things. You can have, of these subscriptions, you can have right now up to 2,000 subscriptions per topic.
Per topic.
Mm-hmm. Each subscription can have any number of rules.
Yes.
Okay. So breaks it down. Each topic can have 2,000 subscriptions. Each subscription can have any number of rules. So one other thing, what all different things can you actually filter on? Is it just the actual properties that you put in the message?
Yes.
So the notion is that you will always go and promote out of your message. You'll go and promote out the properties that you want to run rules on. What that leads to is a somewhat different approach to these kinds of messages that you would have in a typical SOAP message, where routing really is in SOAP. SOAP has a focus on the body. Right, because it's a really format that is fitting nicely into the entity body of a framing message, as you would have it here, and so therefore people who are familiar with SOAP just find the concept of having a message with no body completely baffling, because that's what their message is. Here you will find that in many cases, if you want to do advanced routing, you will dissolve a lot of your content straightly into those property bags, and then probably carry that message for easy deserialization, or if you have extra stuff. But you will put a lot more properties into the message. You will have more headers than you would typically have in a SOAP environment. And it's really that's mostly a function of leveraging messaging and having the control over the messaging infrastructure in that way. Right. So I believe what's going to happen in many cases is that folks who are going to use the WCF API will not have so sophisticated uses of that infrastructure.
Okay. So let me bring this up just a little bit higher level. We've seen some really powerful stuff here with topics and subscriptions and queues. If you're a new developer and you're stepping into the Azure framework, you're trying to write applications in the cloud, how do you make your decision based on which messaging technology to use? You know, we have Windows Azure queues, we have Message Buffer, and now we have this. I mean, obviously we're not going to put anything in production with this yet, but once we're farther along, how do developers make those decisions? Is there any kind of guidance?
So we're still working on those things, and we're going to get those into production, and we're going to have some better guidance. Today we have two queuing like elements in Fabric, in the service bus to be precise. So we can talk about those, and then we obviously have two things that are named queues inside of the infrastructure. One is on the storage side, and one is inside of the service bus. So let me talk about that briefly. That is not an unprecedented parallelism that we have in the platform. And in Windows, we have had, since the inception of Windows NT, two mechanisms called pipes and mail slots that are accessed through storage APIs. And that's the way how you do simple inter-process communication, right? So Windows Azure Storage is the storage equivalent here, and they have a sequential store, and that's called the queue, and that's how you do simple inter-process communication. We have a queuing system that has a lot more features, has more capacity, and so the equivalent for that in the Windows platform is MSMQ. So we're shipping MSMQ in the box, and we're shipping name pipes and mail slots in the box, and that's exactly equivalent. So if you need to have the features of the Windows Azure App Fabric queues, and if you want to have the ability to go and upgrade very easily to the PubSub infrastructure. So if you don't want to have the single one, but if you want to be able to basically break it apart into a topic and subscription, and if you think that having taps for archiving or for further processing is something that's useful for your application down the road, then that's something that you should prefer the queues and the topics that we have.
Okay. You guys also have a little bit more functionality in the area of detecting duplicate messages, right?
Yes, that's true. So
in Windows Azure queues, it's they guarantee delivery of a message at least once.
Yes.
It could happen more than once, but at least once. Where you guys have some deduplication functionality.
Yeah, we have dedupe in that you can if you send a message twice with the same message ID, so you create a message and you're sending that message, and now you're unsure because of some transport error whether you have sent that message already, you can send that message again, and we'll detect whether that message has already been sent. So that's one thing we do on that end. And of course, what we have is the notion of sessions, and we have the notion of correlation, and these are all advanced queuing features that are not
can
in
I add
the
to that,
Azure queue.
Yes. Can I add to that? So what are the key things that in any queuing system, that one of the key things you want in a queuing system is the ability to make sure that the message is delivered or read correctly or read by one person, right? So like you mentioned, at least once is such an example. We have three scenarios that we support, like at least once, exactly once, or best effort. Right. At least once, like, you know, you peak lock a message on the receive side, you peak lock a message, you get it, you crash, and then you ask for it again, you'll get it after the lock timeout. We also support transactions. We also support local transactions for atomicity, where you can actually use your using transaction block, you do a receive and delete, it will be transactional, right? You would get that exactly once behavior. And best effort is if you don't use transactions, you use our receive and delete, yeah, you may or may not lose the you may or may not get the message based on if you crash or if you don't recover and so on.
No guaranteed durability.
No guaranteed durability. Yes.
And then the other thing you asked about was the message buffer and what the guidance is there. We're still not close on whether we're going to keep using the name message buffer, because the message buffer, what the message buffer gives you today is it's a volatile structure. And as a volatile structure, we don't make any guarantees about it, but it's there and it's memory based. So the guidance will be that if you use message buffers today, that you'll move over to the queues, because you're going to get exactly the same capabilities but that you have already, but much more functionality and, of course, the more guarantees, because the queues are durable. So the message buffers will likely be the current functionality or the current implementation is something we're going to go retire eventually. The question isn't, we haven't landed on this yet, whether we're going to keep the name around for a concept that is currently in MSMQ known as express queues, where you have we're opting out of the storage layer, but saying, yeah, it's okay if you just cache all this data without giving me any further guarantees, but for that, make it a little faster. So we're still not close on whether we're going to do that and whether we're going to keep the name around for this or whether we're going to have it as a queue with a flag. Because message buffer kind of conveys that concept, we might stick to it. That's not clear yet. But message buffer in the current form are superseded in functionality entirely by the queue. So so any new code should take dependency then on queues.
Okay.
But we're going to keep the service compatible. We're not saying we're breaking compatibility or anything. So if you're provisioning message buffers today, if you work with message buffers, we're going to support that. But eventually, what we might do is we might pull the queue underneath the current implementation.
And to add to that, the REST protocol that we use for message buffer is fairly compatible with the queue as well. So you can
yeah.
kind of migrate fairly easily with maybe a little bit of tweaks.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's all the questions I have. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about?
I would encourage everybody to kind of look at the user guide documentation. There's a lot more than what we didn't talk.
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
There's state. There's like session scheduled messages where you can retry messages later. There's like lots of functionality in there.
So
do try it out. And it's really straightforward. Go to portal.appfabriclabs.com. You can download the SDK there. You can sign up for the namespace. It's free. So check it out for sure.
portal.appfabriclabs.com.
Labs.com.
So you just go there, and what it will do, it will prompt you for a Windows Live ID sign in, and you don't have to sign up before that. You simply sign in, and then you'll land here. And if we don't have a subscription for you yet, we're just going to generate one. So you can use this together with the SDK. The easiest way, if you use Visual Studio today, and you're an ASP.NET programmer, and you have downloaded MVC3 already, the easiest way to get there is simply go to your NuGet package manager and type in service bus, and you will find the CTP bits as NuGet package. It will automatically add to your... just add a package, and that will give you whatever you need. And you can also go to...
We also have samples as part of the NuGet download as well, so you can try out those samples.
Yes, and you can go to servicebus.coplex.com.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the new site where we have, first of all our samples, but then there's stuff that we are going to put out in addition to this utility code. I have a sample called Portbridge, which people are currently downloading from my blog. So we're going to move that over there. And so we have things that we've accumulated over the last year or one and a half that are small utilities, and we're going to go and put them all in Coplex so people can go and use them.
So portal.appfabriclabs.com to sign up and get all this stuff. So Coplex to get your samples. And NuGet packages to get your binaries.
That's right.
That's about it. And
this is all free for development.
Oh, it's all free for development. Yes.
That's awesome.
All right.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Bob. Thanks, MK.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for coming. Hey.